Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And it was a wild week one in the National Football League. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Doing well. Just thinking back to Joe calling me last week and asking me if I thought there was a buzz about the Titans around the league. I'd like to amend my statement. There is a buzz now about the Titans around the league today, as opposed to my thought process last week. I told Joe, I said, hey, if they really put a number, they come out big, you know, there's definitely going to be a buzz. It's just the number that got put out there, it was the flip side of it.
But hey, looks like Chandler Jones is going to end up with about 85 sacks this year. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, I mean, it would help if he was facing an offensive line with, you know, the best player coming off an ACL and also missing, I don't know, a first-round pick who probably should be on the roster right now contributing, a second-round pick that probably should have made the active roster. You know, it's a line. I doubt he's going to face a line that has so much work to do in and out every single week. But, hey, you know, bully for Chandler Jones. It's a contract year for him. That's the way to start.
Off to a good start. Off to a great start on that contract year. So, Charles, obviously, the Titans game, very surprising here locally to how that played out. The Packers get destroyed by New Orleans down in Jacksonville. What was the most surprising result to you in week one throughout the league?
It was close, honestly, between how the Titans showed up and how the Packers showed up. But probably the Packers. I just couldn't see after all the off-season drama and then supposedly the cohesion that took place in camp and everything with Aaron Rodgers and the, you know, his teammates, and they all felt good. And, you know, even Aaron Rodgers kind of suggested after that loss that maybe they were a little blown up on themselves. You know, they thought they'd, you know, that offense would be able to boat race whoever they played. And clearly that was not the case. I to see a 35-point loss and Aaron Rodgers, you know, pulled out of a game, you know, to protect him with almost 11 minutes left in the fourth quarter is just horrific. And it's one of those games where you look at next week, the Packers play the Lions on Monday Night Football, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, they should be able to beat the Lions in Lambeau, but they better beat the Lions convincingly, because if you know, this is an offense that struggles again, if it's a defense that struggles again, I mean, Jameis Winston basically untouched for the vast majority of that game. There's going to be a lot of questions, and there are going to be a lot of people picking over Aaron Rodgers not being in the offseason program until camp started. And, you know, is there a hangover? Are other people not thinking about football right now? That's just a lot of questions to be answered. And you know, again, with the Titans, I think the Titans are second, you know, close second to see Mike Vrabel come out and, I mean, he lit up Julio Jones. I thought, okay, what he said, that's the kind of thing that typically, particularly after week one, guy's a big addition for your team. You say that behind closed doors, you coach him up. Obviously, he chose to say it at a podium. I get it. Julio, bad game. You know, the interception was his fault. The 15-yard penalty when you're in third and one is just, you can't have that happen. But it was a stunner to see both the Titans and Packers come out like that. And oh, by the way, the Titans only have to play, you know, in Seattle against a Seattle offense that looked like what we all thought it would look like down the stretch last season. I mean, clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, well, yeah, no doubt. It doesn't get easier. And boy, playing the NFC West this year is rough for the AFC South.
Worst year to play, yeah, the NFC West. I mean, clearly the best division in football. I mean, even the 49ers, people are going to look at that score with Detroit, and you're going to say, well, geez, that seemed a little bit closer. It wasn't that close. And not only that, the 49ers, I'm sitting there watching that game yesterday, and I'm like, man, they're far more offensively talented than I thought. And in, like, just from contributions with guys that I didn't expect. And, you know, it was a game like Brandon Ayuk didn't even really show in that game. Right. Like, it's, you know, so there's, yeah, it's a bad year to play the NFC West. That stinks for the Titans.
So on the Julio quote, that's interesting that it struck. See, it struck me, Charles, and we've been talking about it a lot today, because it's rare for Vrabel to do something like that. But it feels to me like it's even around the league just on its own, whether he is or not, as people are. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with the subject of the quote. But speaking of Julio, you know, there's been some stuff. I mean, Jeff Schultz had a piece, you know, for us a couple weeks ago with Arthur Blank talking on the record about all the difficulties there, you know, after the contract stuff and coaches. I mean, how do you view him here now and I guess the potential for things to go bad?
Well, it was, like I said, it was an eyebrow raiser to see Vrabel come out and refer to it the way that he did, which, you know, again, I absolutely expected that to be his stance, but I would have thought, particularly in week one, it's something you address behind closed doors. You know, if you really want to, you know, lay out an expletive and say that's not what we coach here and you know not to do that, you do it on the sideline, you reiterate it in film at some point, and then you're done with it. And you make sure, you know, the position coach is saying, okay, you know, let's get it together. Not a great start here. You know, in terms of the Atlanta stuff, you know, I don't know. I take that with a grain of salt. I'll say this, when the coaching staff and front office broke up, I did hear some grousing from people who went out the door about, like, hey, we never should have signed him to the deal that we did, the extension we did. We were pressured by Arthur Blank to do that. And it put us in a position where it made it difficult to coach Julio really hard at that point. And just really, you know, because it was clear the owner loved this guy. And when an owner says pay him and pay him big, you know, it's in a situation where you have to hope that he self-motivates, does all the right things. And, you know, you're not railing on him to try and make sure that he's perfect all the time. Again, I don't know that he wasn't. I think there's a lot of, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking that happens in those scenarios, and even by the media once somebody's out the door. You know, I mean, no offense, but like Joe and I came up in Michigan, and there's a very well-known columnist who is great for writing scathing columns after somebody was gone. And I've always had a problem with that. I'm not a big fan of somebody who's, you know, ripping it once someone's out of that locker room or out of that town, and you don't have to walk in and face that person. So
name names.
I'm trying to be. I'm not going to name names, but I know you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Very well known columnist.
My former coworker.
And your former coworker of Joe's. And so, I'm trying to be generous with Julio here, because the point, the thing that I look at is he's got the talent. There's no question about that. He had a bad start. And you hope, and I looked at, this is kind of how I looked at Green Bay too. You hope that this is that moment where it's like, okay, got to wake up now. That was not, that is not how that is supposed to go. And that has to be a quick, you know, change immediately, 180 degrees next week. And I kind of felt like when you listen to Aaron Rodgers talk about the Packers, that's what he was saying. He was like, we can't, okay, I was bad. We just got to change this immediately. Like, and that's the wake up call. And I would think that that's sort of how it is with Julio. I just think that what caught me off a little bit was to hear how Mike Vrabel addressed him. But I also think it was, you know, look, it was emotional. And oh, by the way, Matt LaFleur used the E word, embarrassed, week one. And I think Rodgers was a little pissed about that when he, you know, because he said, look, I'll let him use that word or whatever. Rodgers wasn't going to say he was embarrassed. But, you know, you had two coaches who basically came out pretty upset about how it reflected on them, because obviously when you suffer either of these losses, it's a pretty big indictment on coaches. And you know, you have some emotional words, but I always say, like, hey, week one, let's not get too excited. It's definitely an advertisement for the Calm app. Everybody's chill out. Like, you know, we're nothing's ever as bad or as good as you think week one, which means like Arizona looks amazing. Do I think that's going to be Arizona all season long? I doubt it.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, what did you think of the Manning brothers broadcast last night? Peyton and Eli taking in some Monday Night Football. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was awesome. What did you think of the broadcast last night with the Ravens and Raiders game?
Oh, I loved it. It was funny because I didn't initially start watching on that broadcast, and then I was kind of looking at Twitter and I saw everybody talking about it, and I'm like, okay, let me flip over, and I never flipped back after I got over. I love the lack of production value. I love that, like, you know, a commercial happens, and people are like, what? Are we getting a commercial? commercial break? I'm like, you tell me you're not familiar with commercials? Like, I'm pretty sure you know what a commercial is. You know, like, it was just everything about it was, the clunkiness of it was charming, and but I also love that, frankly, it was, there was a lot of real sort of insight. You know, you get this sort of storytelling aspect to that, which you expect. But what I really love was the end of it. Like, Russell Wilson still has a play in the league. And the last play of the game where Zay Jones, the defender just basically gives up, and Zay Jones walks in with a touchdown, and Russell Wilson's like, what? Like, what? I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, what? Did he just give up? Why did he just give up? I'm like, yeah, you know, Peyton and Eli could probably see that. Like, I don't know if you should really, like, you're still in the league right now. Like, be careful about. But that was sort of what I liked about it. I thought ESPN did it right. Like, it was something different, and they picked the right guys, I think, in Peyton and Eli, who, you know, I've had a chance to spend time with Peyton before, like at the Manning Passing Academy, and he's always really engaging anytime he's talking about the game or players or history or whatever. And that's a part of Eli that I don't think many people have seen. They haven't seen, but he can, especially when you get the two of them together. You sort of saw it last night. So I did. I liked it. I definitely will tune in, you know, next week. That's where I'll start, you know, Monday Night Football.
I know. Like, I mean, I did the same thing. I was like, okay, I'll check it out. But, you know, the thing is, I love Riddick. You know, like, I love Riddick's analysis.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah,
but
sure.
Like, but those two guys, you know, oh, look at that's zero again. I mean, they're caught the coverage every time. It's a little bit like Romo, but even, I think, better in terms of just the depth of analysis, honestly, along with the entertainment value of, you know, them ripping on each other a little bit. Like, I'm hooked on it.
Yeah, totally the entertainment value of ripping on them. But another thing I would say to fans, particularly who are watching this, if you've never watched film with a player before, it was very much like that in real time. It was like, so like the last play, which clearly was a busted coverage, two defenders run into each other. And I don't know if it was Eli or Peyton said it first, but the second they saw the replay, they're like, oh, he ran into, you know, they ran into each other on the twist. And it was like, in my mind, it triggered the few times where I've watched like film with a player or watched film with like an OC or a DC, and they immediately, the first time they back up the tape after seeing, you know, something run live, they'll immediately diagnose what just happened pretty quickly. And so it's sort of like, it's to me, it's like what we like about the Tony Romo experience is Tony sitting there going, oh, okay, here we go. Boom, boom, boom. He's going to do this. And before the snap, and we're like, wow, that's really uncanny. And it just sort of gives you another, I guess, layer of what it's like to watch through the eyes of a player. And, you know, I think they picked a good pair. I'm not often complimentary of ESPN when they try what I always feel like is sort of gimmicks to make Monday Night Football better or whatever. But this one I actually think worked. I was like, it's clearly a lot of people enjoyed it. And I think it's sustainable with those two. And I actually like too that they didn't overproduce it, because I hate the idea of having stuck like a traffic cop between those two and sort of like bantering it back and forth. No, just sit them in two seats, let them do what they're going to do, bring on some guests. And I thought it was perfect. I the lack of production quality actually drew me in, because I'm like, hey, this is, you kind of get to see the weird, awkward angles of this, and it's nice.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And I just want to say, microwaved Alpo at a steak restaurant is a heck of a way to describe a lost Joe Rex Road. Gold star.
Thank you, Charles. Hey, you know, next time we have you on, I'll ask you what your favorite album is, okay? But we'll save that for the next show.
My favorite album? Oh.
You get it? Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk in code on the radio. All right.
Your favorite album. Okay. All right.
There we go.
Thanks, Charles. We appreciate it. See you, man. We'll come back. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Take your thoughts on our text line as well. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub in Cool Springs this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 1 to 3 p.m. live at Corner Pub in Cool Springs at 9200 Carruthers Parkway prior to the Titans taking on the Seattle Seahawks. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parman Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, now with two locations in Murfreesboro. Visit our brand new Murfreesboro location at 2019 Memorial Boulevard, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Thanks to our good buddy Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for joining us in the last segment. Said it was really close between the Titans and the Packers for the most shocking performances in week one. I think it would probably be difficult as an NFL fan to go anywhere else than either one of those two in week one with how lopsided those games were.
Yeah, big disappointment for Michelle's favorite fan base, Bills Mafia, to lose at home to Pittsburgh. But, I mean, that's a solid football team. I mean, we expected Pittsburgh. It was a close game. Overreactions are rampant during this week. But, yeah, those two results were just eye-popping compared to everything else.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Did you have something to say?
Well, I was just going to say, it is interesting that former coworkers, Mike Vrabel and Matt LaFleur, their quotes are getting a lot of play this week.
A lot of analyzing going on out there right now.
Yes.
A lot of analyzing. David texting in, do you want to talk about dumb stuff? How about the Titans going for it on fourth down last year and this year? They made it last year with a great pass by Woodside, and they also made it this year, but both of them just gave them a first down, and they produced nothing after that. If they failed either of those, they would have lost points almost surely. The only reason we don't talk about them is because they made it. Doesn't change that it's still extremely dumb stuff. So, David, not a big fan of the fourth down conversion between Matias Farley and Amani Hooker the other day.
So, David, are you saying that any sort of fake of a punt or a field goal is always dumb? I would disagree with that. Now, I would say that the one they tried with Brett Kern a few years ago wasn't the best. We've talked about that one a few times.
Extensively.
But I actually thought, I mean, look, I would say that, and I'm not being hyperbolic here, and I remember that John McClain was in the press box with me, you know, just a few seats down, and he said, and I will say, I thought the same thing, and he said after the game, he said, that might be the best coach game I've ever seen, and it was one of the best coach games I've ever seen. 2018, week two, Mike Vrabel's second game, they had no offensive linemen. They had, like, everyone thought it was going to be awful. And they won largely because of a touchdown from Kevin Byard to Dane Cruikshank on a fake punt. The safety throwing to the safety. Yep. That one worked out better than this one did. But I didn't hate the fake punt. I thought they needed a spark, and they got a spark. And then, by the way, here's how the offense responded to the spark. First down, Derrick Henry, run, loses a yard. So that put him at 5 rushes for 4 yards. Derrick Henry gets 2 yards. Now he's at 6 carries for 6 yards. And then 3rd and 9, Taylor Lewan can't block Chandler Jones. Sacks Ryan Tannehill. So the offense, which was, again, the biggest problem by far, way beyond anything else, simply didn't capitalize. But, hey, they saw something on film and it worked. I mean, sometimes those can be huge moments in a game for a team to help win a game.
I just want to throw out there that in the two times that we've seen a safety throw a pass in Mike Vrabel's tenure, it's worked out pretty well.
It has.
2 for 2.
Safety throwing, safety catching.
One of them was a touchdown.
Yeah.
So
that was a heck of a play.
It was.
But, look, in terms of other things, though, in that game, There are a lot of things. There's a long list of things the Titans did wrong on top of the Julio Jones penalty.
Well, a long list of things that they did wrong that I think concern you normally, but then when you look back at how Seattle played week one against Indianapolis, you got a lot of things to clean up in a hurry, because if Seattle plays like they did last week, you're going to have to play almost perfectly to win that game on the road. Because, look, Russell Wilson and company, I mean, Tyler Lockett played great last week. You've got DK Metcalf. They ran the ball okay with Chris Carson as well. Like, they've got a really good offense. Now, I still think defensively there's some talent there, and obviously Jamal Adams is a great player. You know, it's not the Legion of Boom that they got back there or anything anymore. So there should be some plays to be made there offensively for the Titans if they can block better, which is a big if, because supposedly that's the strength of the Indianapolis Colts, and it did not look like the strength of the Indianapolis Colts against Seattle on Sunday.
Yeah, this is a huge I think a lot of people are going to be, you know, we've already seen some of it, picking against the Titans, thinking they're going to get blown out, which I understand based on how they looked and how Seattle looked. But this is going to be especially a big challenge, the offensive line week. And what you hope beyond the whole wake-up call idea, the whole, okay, you're going to respond to that and be galvanized and just be determined to play tough football. You also hope that, you know, Ben Jones, Nate Davis, now a full week, now removed from being from the COVID list, and their injuries can really find something. I think you're fine at right tackle with David Quessenberry. I think you might need to rethink backing up Taylor Lewan right now. But obviously you hope he responds too, and that he can feel better, get his mobility together. I mean, some of those blow-bys. Chandler Jones is a very good player, but in a normal encounter with those, with Lewan fully healthy and everything like that, that doesn't happen. So, to me, there's got to be some physical limitation still lingering or whatever with Lewan. So, you hope he responds too. And I still think this could be a very good offensive line. I think the Colts could have a very good offensive line. We could be talking about just a completely different thing next week, just like we are this week with Vanderbilt.
That's right. And right now, first place Houston Texans. We'll see if we're talking about that next week as well.
Mm.
Texans with a big
one.
Well,
they will be. They will be no worse than tied for first.
They'll be no worse than tied for first.
That I can guarantee you.
That is correct. Speaking of bouncing back, a lot of that's going to have to do with Todd Downing and whether or not he can come up with a plan and execute that plan on Sundays. Lots of criticism for Todd Downing after Sunday's game. How much of it is fair? How much of it is unfair? We'll get into that coming up next. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Tune into Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds begin a six-game road trip against Gwinnett, the AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. The pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 5:50, and first pitch is at 6:05. Nashville Sounds Baseball presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember FDIC, equal housing lender. Also streaming on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. And we're excited to announce that you can watch us every day on streaming. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. So lots of you participating on Twitter and on on YouTube and on Twitch as well. And we appreciate that. Appreciate your comments on there as well. Joe, a lot of talk about the offensive line, and that's why I think it's tough to really judge what we saw in some respects from Todd Downing in game one, because when you can't block, your entire offensive game plan really gets thrown into the mud at that point. But we did talk about it yesterday. I thought there were some decisions and some play calling early in the game that I didn't like, was not a fan of, and that I feel like has to get much better as they move ahead here. Now, we knew this going into the season. If the offense, for whatever reason, isn't productive on a game-by-game basis, or one game turns around and it's a slow start for this Titans offense, Todd Downing going to receive a lot of heat based on Arthur Smith, how productive he was, and how productive this offense was while he was here. A lot of Titans fans already upset with Todd Downing. How much criticism of Downing at this point do you think is fair? If you're a Titans fan, how worried are you about Todd Downing, not only with the first game that just happened, but also based on his track record with the Raiders as well.
Well, to me, the criticism is 100% fair for this game. It's no different than a head coach if your team overall plays poorly. I mean, look, the head coach would say, yeah, but this guy didn't execute this, and then this guy didn't do this, and all, you know. Well, okay, it's on you. You're the head coach. Same thing with the offense. The offense was so bad all the way around. I think it's absolutely fair to say Todd Downing had a terrible day at the office. I don't know how you could argue otherwise. But what happens especially after week one, when this is the only information, is then people take it to, oh my gosh, this year's going to be a disaster. And that's a massive overreaction. I didn't watch that game. I don't watch that game and say, oh my gosh, he has no chance. Let's remember with Arthur Smith, and there were other factors, the biggest one being Taylor Lewan being suspended. Although it's kind of an interesting parallel because Taylor Lewan may as well have been just out of the game Sunday the way he played, right? So remember that when the Titans were 2-4, it wasn't just in 2019, it wasn't just Marcus Mariota or Tannehill. It wasn't just like Lewan. A lot of it was also, how the heck did you elevate this tight ends coach to OC? And then we saw what happened during the year. Now, there was no track record for Arthur Smith at that time as an OC, and there is a year of bad offensive performance on the record of Todd Downing. Yep. So that would be a big difference there. But I'm still in total wait-and-see mode. Excuse me. Wait-and-see mode on him in terms of what this will be this year. I think it would be way overreacting to look at that and say it's just going to be a disaster. They're taking a huge step down from Arthur Smith. It's absolutely fair to say that was a bad day of work for Todd Downing.
I think it is too. And look, I agree with what Corey Curtis said yesterday and what we've talked about a little bit. You know, the offensive coordinator position is maybe the easiest spot in all of sports to criticize because, I mean, you can tangibly see what they're doing is either working or it's not working, and there's really no in-between with the offensive coordinator, so I get that. And obviously Todd Downing knows a lot more about football than I do. But moving forward, like, I would like to see, even if, and you know, especially if the line is struggling, get the ball in the hands of Julio Jones and A.J. Brown quickly. Hit the ball on some bubble screens. Go with some slant routes. I mean, get the ball in their hands quickly and let your playmakers make some plays for you. You know, I realized pretty much everything that could go wrong Sunday went wrong against Arizona, but I felt like early in the game, those two did not get enough targets. They did not try to get those two the ball quickly enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, and play action, which Vrabel was asked about yesterday. Someone had the stat that they did it twice. I don't remember who had the stat. I mean, if it's Pro Football Focus, they're probably, you know, they're probably off like two or three because I don't trust Pro Football Focus. But they didn't do much. And Vrabel was asked that, and he said, well, it's hard to dial that up on 2nd and 12. But I would say it's not a bad idea maybe every once in a while to do it on 1st and 10 or just drop back on 1st and 10. I mean, you know, play action can – and the data definitely supports this. Play action works for teams that don't run the ball well too, actually. I mean, there's – you know, it can be a useful tool. But when you are running on first down repeatedly over and over again and you are then behind the chains – well, I get it. I mean, again, the second possession was run into the line. Now you're 2nd and long, and now you're going play action, naked bootleg, and, well, Chandler Jones thanked the Titans very much for that. It's the easiest strip sack he'll ever have in his life.
I forgot that it was a contract year for Chandler Jones. It's off to a great start.
It's a good start. That's a good start. I mean, he's good. He's been good. But they turned him into LT.
Who had the most sacks on the Titans last year?
Harold Landry had 5.5.
Okay, so in one game, Chandler Jones almost surpassed the season sack leader for the Titans last year.
There you go.
It's pretty incredible.
Lots of stats that you can have fun with out of this game.
It's pretty incredible. Oh, man. I got a lot of thoughts on the text line about the Peyton Manning broadcast last night. What did you think of Peyton and Eli?
Yeah, no, I loved it.
I loved it.
I loved it. I did. And I didn't necessarily I wasn't like all jacked up to watch that. I was like, okay, that's a kind of a cool idea. Like, I like when I do like the coach round table for like the national championship game. But honestly, even with that, I'd kind of like, okay, I'm going to go back to just the announcers and the game. Narduzzi did that one year, by the way. That was entertaining.
But it was.
But I got hooked on this. I got hooked on it because, again, it's not just the entertainment value and all that stuff. And I agree with Charles on the low production value. It kind of it has a charm to it. But to me, it's just it's really a lot of good football talk. You know,
I think if, from those as guys, this season goes on, if it continues like it was last night, you learn a lot about football watching a game with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning. Like I was,
yeah,
I was blown away by what I was seeing last night in terms of just it felt like you were in a room with them and they were having a casual conversation about just watching the game.
And the thing is, like Lewis Riddick is a great, I think he's a great analyst,
yep.
And he also will give you a lot of really good insight and knowledge, but it's still like a normal broadcast. You just have a lot of formality you have to get through. Like play by play has to call the play, and yep. This like there's only so much time that Lewis Riddick has to give. And frankly, I mean, I just think he's way better than Greasy.
Yeah,
to give you that analysis. But with this, these guys are just like, oh man, look at that, or like it's just again, it's just like guys sitting around watching. And there's actually more information that you can get from that, along with the fact that it's funny.
Nate on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. My favorite parts were when Peyton and Eli were doing the Gruden and Carr impressions and when Peyton put on the small helmet. Peyton did put on the Ravens helmet last night.
That he does have quite a noggin.
Eli talked about.
As the hair fades a little bit, you get older, the size of the noggin becomes even more impressive, actually.
Well, there was a lot of talk about Peyton at the Hall of Fame. You know, the bust came out,
yeah.
And the forehead probably not proportional to what Peyton Manning's forehead actually looks like. That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
I think he got jazzed about that a few times. I think Archie took a shot at the forehead.
See, I just saw the text that they said, quit scratching your head or something?
Yeah.
Or quit itching your head? Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in. I'm in on it. I'm very interested to see the ratings and how that did first night and how much momentum it picks up.
I know this. When the Green Bay Packers take on the Detroit Lions next week on Monday Night Football, I'm going to be watching the whole thing with Peyton and Eli.
I mean, that's –
and probably Brett Favre.
This is one of the few ways you can get me to watch a Detroit Lions football game, but I actually want to laugh at them laughing at the Lions.
See what happens on that front. When we come back, we'll switch gears. Could an NFL coach already be on his way out the door thanks to an opening in college football? We'll get to that coming up next. Got some tickets to give away as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I cannot, this helmet doesn't fit. I gotta have specially made helmets.
Specially made helmets.
Okay. They do. Riddell makes precision fit helmets now. They fit your head specifically. Yes, for big heads. All right, that's the new thing.
You need some more powder on that forehead. You look like you sprayed Pam all over it.
Okay, here we go.
Nice.
That was Peyton and Eli last night on the Pam. Ravens and Raiders broadcast. Lots of good stuff last night by the Manning brothers. If you missed it, probably something to check out as they move forward here. Jeff texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I believe Peyton and Eli's broadcast goes to ESPN Plus beginning next week. I'll have to check on that. Maybe it does. I've got ESPN Plus, though, so whatever.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know.
So this is going to...
I have no reason to doubt Jeff.
This is going to subscriber.
Could be.
To get it. Huh. Okay.
I'll still be watching.
I'll still be watching, okay. Too.
I don't know that. I don't think I have that. I think I used to.
Yeah. Maybe now. Maybe this was the bait last night. Mm. They used it on ESPN.
Will you get it, Joe?
To get it in there?
I don't know. We'll see.
Could be back to Lewis Riddick for Joe Rexrod.
That's the thing. I mean, I actually felt like I was kind of betraying Lewis Riddick. I'm a huge
friend
fan.
Of the show.
A friend of the show, Lewis Riddick. Great analysis. Like, are those guys happy about this?
Probably not.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like this pinnacle to get to Monday Night Football. Now it's like, oh, thanks, guys.
But we're going
to
put Peyton Manning over there.
Peyton and Eli are going to joke around and have like Barkley and Russell Wilson and Ray Lewis on. And you guys can call your little game. Thanks.
I'm interested to see what the ratings look like on that front. We've got some tickets to give away to see TSU take on Kentucky State coming up at Nissan Stadium this Saturday. Be caller number 3 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see TSU and Kentucky State at Nissan Stadium coming up this Saturday. Joe Rexroad, some interesting news yesterday in the world of college football. Clay Helton has been fired by the USC Trojans. They were run all over against Stanford the other day. They fall 42-28. Clay Helton is fired. And now a very prominent college football program has a job opening. And a lot of people yesterday trying to connect the dots between Urban Meyer and the USC job opening. Obviously, things did not go well for Urban Meyer in week one with the Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence with three picks. They get beat by what many people consider to be maybe the worst team in the league in the Houston Texans and really got dominated by Houston in that game. What do you think about the possibility of Urban Meyer taking the USC job? Is that even remotely on his radar at this point, being a head coach in the NFL one game in?
I mean, Reddit College Football or something tweeted that, you know, sources that he's about to leave. That would be an all-time just what-are-you-talking-about moment. Right? No, I don't think there's anything to it. I don't think there's anything to Urban Meyer being interested in that job if he was a free agent right now. I think it's Notre Dame or nothing for the rest of Urban Meyer's career. And it may well happen at some point. But I don't buy it. I'd also like to say, what the hell is USC doing? Like, Clay Helton has supposedly been, you know, just no one likes him. Everybody wants him out of there and all this stuff. Why'd you go into the season with him? You get one bad outcome against Stanford and you
fire him two games in.
So now, you know, yeah. I mean, just do it in the offseason then.
Yeah, it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
It's bizarre. But
how attractive is that job right now? I mean, it's USC, right? But in today's landscape of college football, how attractive is the USC job?
Well, Ryan Porth hopes not very attractive. Now, I saw Dennis Dodd reporting yesterday. He wrote a piece that Fickell is the choice. My first thought was James Franklin.
Yep.
And I feel like James Franklin, I think it just depends on the person. I think there's a lot to be concerned with. It's not what it used to be. The Pac-12, although great week for them, beating Ohio State, but the Pac-12 is going to lose footing compared to, I mean, really even like, so like if you're James Franklin, yeah, you probably hate being in Ohio State's division. But over time, I think, you know, the money dictates that you're in a better spot to stay in the Big Ten, and the ideal spot would be the SEC. It's a pro town. It's Hollywood. It's when they were at their absolute best. Yeah, it was awesome. Like they had Snoop Dogg at practice and stuff. But they still also had like 20,000 empty seats on most Saturdays.
Yep.
So I mean, in a massive stadium. But I still think it's an attractive job. Their access to talent is tremendous. But I don't know. Like Luke Fickell. If they are all in on Luke Fickell, what an interesting choice for him.
Yeah.
Cincinnati's going to the Big 12. That's what Ryan Porth is saying. But Big 12. Luke, you're in the Big 12, which means, like, so in other words, the AAC South. But Luke Fickell's a Midwest guy. I mean, he's never really worked out there. And it's going to be fascinating if they are all in on him, as Dennis Dodd reported. I feel like James Franklin would be a good hire for them, and I feel like James Franklin might love that opportunity. I mean, I think a lot of people still look at USC and say, it's USC, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that far removed from greatness like some of these other programs that have cycled down. I would look at James Franklin if I were them. But if it's Fickell, he's very good.
Do you know who I think would be really good for this job right now at this stage in his career? He can't take it because he can't do it again. Lane Kiffin. I think he would be awesome for the job right now. And they fired him on the tarmac. I realize that. But, like, Lane Kiffin, I think, is a much different coach now than he was back in those days. I think there's been some maturity to Lane Kiffin. I think going to Alabama really helped him. Doing a good job with Ole Miss. I think he would do really well there. I don't anticipate that happens.
I don't hate that at all.
Yeah.
I think you're onto something. You know who else? We had a guest earlier on the show who's basically responsible for Pete Carroll being in Seattle, and he's responsible for Reggie Bush not having his Heisman, which is Charles Robinson. He did the story on Reggie Bush and that entire thing, which was a big part of Pete Carroll moving on.
Yeah.
What about Pete Carroll coming back? No one cares now. Name, image, likeness.
It's true.
Come on back. Recruit. You know, mm-hmm. Russell Wilson's mad at you.
Although they didn't look mad at each other on Sunday.
They looked like best friends. So maybe everything's all. That's the thing. This week, Titans play a clean game, win. Yeah. Julio has a big day. Roses and puppies and rainbows.
Dennis texting in on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Would USC be interested in Todd Downing?
There we go.
Here we go.
I got mailbag this week. I mean,
it's going to be great.
Combine all the like fire coordinator questions into one.
Keith texting in. Bill O'Brien accepts the USC job the week before the national championship game. Alabama wins it all again with some dude we'd never heard of calling plays. You think USC waits that long?
Bill O'Brien,
they might have to if they get somebody good.
Pete Thamel put out a list, including some of the people we've been talking about, but Bill O'Brien was on there too.
Yeah.
The coach career reclamation work that Nick Saban does, it moves quickly.
Could it be Josh Heupel after year one? Just recycle this Lane Kiffin thing all over again? Heads out to USC. The people of Knoxville start burning mattresses in the streets again. This could be an annual thing or every 10-year type thing.
What would the reaction be if that's the case?
Oh, it would not be good.
But it would not be like that.
Probably not. But
I mean, that was like, weren't there like major hopes? Like Lane is going to bring this back to a natty.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's right after Fulmer.
Who has that hope right now?
Not very many people.
I don't even think you burn like a pillowcase.
Probably not.
Let alone a mattress.
That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Got a lot to get to. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. Right now, though, I've got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. And the biggest game this Sunday is the Chiefs and the Ravens. And FanDuel Sportsbook is about to make it even bigger because FanDuel is giving customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. And that means you can end the weekend the right way by winning $150 on a $5 bet. Personally, really like Kansas City in this game, but you take it any way you want to take it. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. You can see for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. So, if you're new to FanDuel, just sign up with promo code ROB this Sunday before the Chiefs take on the Ravens, and you could win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember to use promo code ROB so they know that I sent you exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only, a $10 first deposit required. Must wagering designated offer market, a max bonus of $150. Bonus for Tennessee users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Tennessee site credit expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.